You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to You're Making It Worse. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
We're here. We're queer.
Meh.
Textual healing.
Yeah, so New York City Pride is taking steps to ban police presence from its annual event, the Gay Pride Parade. So Heritage of Pride, the organization behind New York City's annual Pride March, announced effective immediately, police groups and law enforcement exhibitors are banned from participating in all New York City Pride events until 2025. Security measures will be overseen by a private company and, quote, safety volunteers. And I literally only pictured lesbians in, like, vests.
What's a safety volunteer?
Safety volunteer is like, I don't know. I pictured, like, lesbians in vests who, like, escort you to the bathroom or something. That's all. Yeah, it's like
middle
the only
hall
thing
aids.
I could imagine.
Wait, do you?
I was going to say real quick. Yeah. Lots of people have pointed out the Pride festivities are only possible because of the Stonewall riots, which were, of course, a protest against a violent police raid in 1969. Mm-hmm. Also, and this actually surprised me, almost every year the New York City Anti-Violence Project receives reports from Pride attendees of harassment or physical altercations with the very police, quote, who are supposed to be protecting us. So
yeah,
that was definitely something to that I
yeah, that's definitely intense. And I mean, using my own very limited experience at parades, no less Pride parades, I remember the police being perfectly nice. Not that that has any sway whatsoever, but I will say that I actually like the idea of having safety volunteers or whatever this
yeah.
a private company and safety volunteers. I don't know. That sounds to me very defund the police, and it sounds like an interesting way to approach it, especially if they've experienced violence in the power, you know.
A major incident of violence followed last year. Even though there wasn't an organized Pride March last year, there were George Floyd, Black Lives Matter,
of course,
queer inspired marches that took the place of Pride for many different queer POC people. And police responded in very aggressive ways last year in New York City and many cities across the country during what would have been Pride marches, mm-hmm. quote unquote. I'm fully for it. I've never thought I'm a white American who has a different relationship with a different sort of historical relationship with police than I think many POC, particularly Black Americans. But I have always thought that even though I've never seen any violence from police, I've never had any problems with police at Pride festivities that I've been at, I do think that police right now and for many years have been a symbol of violence against certain communities in this country. And if it is a trigger to our community to have these symbols at these things that are meant to show pride within our community, then those symbols of violence, the target of violence, which is the reason why the Pride March started in 1970, was because of violence from police. And
right.
So we have a history and a relationship with this, and it's like, there are many countries across the world that are able to have public outdoor festivities without police involvement. They hire their own security. They have their own. And this is not a rare thing in other countries either, to have a difficult relationship with police. And so protest marches, et cetera, hire their own security to protect their own people participating in the event. And I think it's great. I think it's about time. I also think we should get rid of a lot of the corporate people that are Like, fuck Bank of America for 1 month doing something for gay people and then not doing it for the rest of the 11 months. Like, they don't deserve a fucking parade float. You know what I mean? Like,
wait, why are you ragging on B of A? I mean,
I'm just saying that's an example. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, maybe I feel like now more than ever, I'm just saying, hopefully those companies that are sponsoring floats and throwing money into the community are also keeping their, hopefully keeping their promises the rest of the year, and including diversity. And
well, the reason why you don't know is because you're not seeing it in a very active way amongst queer people who are out there supporting Bank of America because of the benefits that they get.
Yeah, I don't know. I see nothing against. I mean, first of all, you guys know my stance on parades. It's entertainment from the 1800s. Yes. They're boring, and the one in New York is very crowded.
They would not call it a parade. They would call it a march.
Okay.
Oh, the Pride March. Yes, got it.
Yeah, that's what they would call it, but it's mostly just shirtless guys. and like perverts and me, like on the side, like trying to get their attention. But
which is another part of the conversation too. There are lots of people who are about the shirtless guys and the guys in thongs and stuff, like that they're no longer symbols of pride and we should get rid of them. Like, that's a whole other part of this conversation.
So what do these people? I mean, which I'm fine with, but like if you don't have corporate floats and you don't have like shirtless guys, like what is pride?
What's
like,
left?
According to the message boards that Alan reads every day, what do they want in a pride parade?
I will tell you what they want. They want different organizations out there actually showing the work that they do and having the corporate sponsors back those organizations to be able to be front and present so that the people who are coming to the Pride March can see, there's an Asian Pacific Islander organization that I can turn to, and I'm out here quietly on the street corner, 16-year-old with my family, not able to come out. That's what they want to see. And sure, that is a part of the Pride March, but it's not the standout part. Do you know what I mean? There are symbols there that sort of cloud that image a little bit. And we should be putting front and center the parts of our community that are struggling right now, particularly POC trans women who are getting beaten and killed every single day. And they should be the ones leading this march. They should be at the front of the fucking march leading
It almost sounds like you're describing like what it used to be.
It
felt...
I mean, there were arguments even back then that it wasn't, they weren't representing the community as well. But yes, I agree. It did used to be more like that.
Yeah, if that means a parade with no guys dressed like they're at like Mardi Gras or like I'm like, bring it on.
I literally was social workers. Alan just wants a parade with like Tracy Chapman and Rosie O'Donnell or something.
Yes, I would love
I would love that.
Yeah, okay with the thongs too. I'm okay with all of that. I think that is, because that is something that was at the original Pride March, and it was a big part of our community way back in the day. And also,
you're an originalist.
There's this great meme that went out that said something about that the men who are wearing the leather chaps and the harnesses and everything, they survived the AIDS epidemic in a way that they found this community because they lost so many people in their community. And if they find strength and hope in wearing a harness and leather out there because of what they went through, well, then fuck it. They deserve to wear the harness.
What's the idea? We haven't talked about this, but isn't there a movement to keep leather out of the parades or something?
That's what
happening?
I meant. Yeah, that's what I talked about when there's another part of this conversation is that they were trying to like take out the sexualization, if you will, of some of the images
leather.
Of Pride March. Not just leather, but other things too. S&M, et cetera.
Got it. Yeah.
I don't know. It's all the same to me, you know?
Yeah.
No, I mean, right? It's like one thing is one thing to somebody and to somebody else it's another thing, but it's all a manner of sexual expression, which, hey, that's the point. It's like it may not be my thing, but I'm glad it exists. I'm glad people feel they can express themselves that way in a parade. And like, why clamp down on anybody doing it unless it's like, insane. They're being like shepherded around with like a leash. On their dick. Marched around on a leash or something. But I don't know. Like, let people do whatever it's a fucking pride parade.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you're not like fully nude, I think it's fine.
Yeah. I will say that despite all this, despite me saying that I want a parade with like social workers and like social workers and folk singers, I rode a float in New York in 2017 and literally was like bawling.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, you got very
emotional.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, it was huge. And also, like, looking around at the diversity of, I think that's what it was, looking around at the diversity of people and, like, old people on the, older people on the sidelines in folding chairs, that, like, it just made me very emotional.
Now, you should, but you should clarify, you were on the Auntie Anne's pretzel float for Pride in 2017, so.
I was on the,
it was really emotional.
I was on the Broad City float, and I was the only one to bring, I brought baked goods, and of course, nobody wanted them. They were, it's like, who doesn't want crumb cake? It's rainbow colored, guys. Rainbow colored.
Not even joking.
We've had many firsts on this podcast. You know what I mean? We've had Elliot's first unhinged sort of behavior story. That
his
was a moment.
Hookups back in first grade. That's
we've
right.
had, you know, celebrity guests that were our first. And today we have our first gay twins on, which that's I think is huge for us. It's huge.
Gay.
Matthew Scott Montgomery. Welcome. Welcome.
Hi. Guys.
Hello.
We're gay twins.
Wait, we are gay twins.
We should establish whose voice is whose. So yes. Matthew, say hello.
Hi. This is Matthew. Hi.
And Daniel, you say hello.
This is Daniel. Hi.
let's do it again. But this time, guys, say, I hate Alan. I hate Alan. Just say it in your cadence so we can get it.
So we don't say our names at all. We just say, I hate Alan. Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, so Daniel and Matthew, you guys are more than just gay twins, obviously. You also work together a lot. You're both actors, but you do a lot in the horror space, which is like, you're like the horror gay twins.
You guys love market horror. This or something.
We do. We love Goosebumps first and foremost.
Yes. So you guys have a great podcast called Welcome to the Deadcast, right? A Goosebumps.
It's Welcome to Deadcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a Goosebumps podcast. What is that about?
It's about Goosebumps.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we were obsessed with the 90s book series. And I mean, it's still going. He's still actually writing the books.
Oh,
they still come
God.
Out to this. Yeah, Goosebumps hasn't stopped, actually. But and then there's a corresponding TV show. And we just kind of are going through all the books. And we reread them and share our gay thoughts on it. And we rewatch the television show and just kind of just giggle and tickle.
Wait,
and
how
roll
many
around.
Are there? How many are there?
There must be hundreds.
There's 62 in the original series. Okay. And then right now we're working our way through the Give Yourself Goosebumps, which is like the choose your own adventure one that we do kind of like, we record that like live. So like sometimes the episodes are like 5 minutes because we die by making the wrong choice. Right. And sometimes they go on for a long time.
Right. And were you guys into Goosebumps when you were young?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. I very much
think
was too.
I was as well. And I'm trying to think, like, what do you think it is that both then and now draws you to this genre of like horror and ghoulishness and like squirminess for especially for kids? Like, what does it draw, what drew you in then and what draws you in now? Because now I feel like it's a little campy, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I think it was like understanding from a young age, like loving spooky things first of all, but it is kind of like the creation of camp a little bit in our in our brains in some ways, you know. It's it's fantastical and wild and silly and stupid and filled with bright colors and all that just speaks so loud.
We should probably add too that your background wall is orange and you have a scream mask staring at us from the ceiling.
That's right.
I do. Orange and this black. Is true.
I'm trying to remember the name of my favorite one. And that's why I'm looking.
Let's figure it out. Let's tell us what it was about.
So I remember a basement and a clown.
There are no clowns in the original 62, but there is stay out of the basement and I live in your basement.
Is there one where there was like not a clown, but like the puppet that you talk, you know what I mean? Like
there's a ventriloquist dummy, Slappy the ventriloquist dummy. Mm-hmm.
That's the clown one that I'm talking about.
Yes.
That's not a clown, I guess. Yeah.
Do you, let me ask you this as well. Do you guys remember when we were younger, there were these books called Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark,
yes.
I think.
Yes. Oh, yes.
They had some of the darkest, like, pictures, illustrations.
Yeah, I haven't
Do you remember those?
Yeah, I haven't read them. They scared me too much, and it was a little bit before our time, so it never felt quite safe. So I've actually never read them before. Have you, Daniel?
I actually read them a couple years ago.
Are they good?
Yeah.
They're weird.
Yeah.
They're very weird.
Macabre and almost like Edward Gorey-esque.
And then every now and then there's just like lyrics to like a silly song about bones.
I'm into that. That I love.
Well, I was a big fan of Goosebumps and all of sort of like scary stories, children's stories, etc. But then I quickly, because my parents were so lazy with me, and I was like the third child in the mix of a bunch of kids, and so like they just didn't care what I did at some point. So I graduated real quickly to reading like Anne Rice and like other like hardcore horror books. Oh. Were you guys like that too? Were you like the horror genre sort of like started you in a more adult path of reading, and it helped you read more adult things?
Daniel, yes. Matthew, absolutely not.
Yes. I started Stephen King pretty early.
Yeah.
Probably too early. I was reading literally right before we started this.
Yeah.
I still read
What one are you reading now?
It's called The Institute.
Oh, I'm reading Lysu's story right now in anticipation of the new show.
I never saw that title out loud.
Yeah, it's good. I know. Is it Lysu or Lise?
Couldn't tell you. I just need to watch the show to figure it out.
Yeah, same. Right. Same. I love Stephen King. Stephen King's book on writing is probably the quintessential book for any writer looking to write. It is the best book ever. Mm.
What, were you guys all, I mean, and I'm asking everybody here, like, as kids, like, Matthew, you're saying it was scary stories to tell in the dark was too scary for you then, as it was for me. I was afraid of truly everything.
I
wonder, like, obviously there's like a thing where little boys especially are geared towards ghoulish stuff and monsters and gross things, and like I remember some girls too, but I feel like it's marketed specifically toward boys, especially when we were kids.
It is
like all these gooey goblins and monsters and stuff like that. And I know it's just to speak for myself, I always sort of stayed away from that stuff because I was truly scared of anything that was even marketed as scary.
But you were also scared of movie trailers. Let's be real.
Everything. Scared of movie trailers. Oh, really? Marshmallows. I was scared of
dating.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Like, he had a girlfriend and you didn't want to hear from her. And when he did, when like she's like, I AIM'd him, he like got diarrhea.
Yeah, that too. But also, I guess I'm just wondering, like, were you all more mature than me in that as kids you could separate what was like gross and scary and ghoulish from, like, were you able to understand it with a little bit of camp, knowing like this is all fake, whereas I was like petrified that I was going to be abducted by aliens?
I think sometimes subconsciously as a queer person, as you're born, you're like in on the joke of being alive because you see behind the curtain of how everything that's institutionalized heteronormatively is bullshit, so it's like you kind of I don't think it was like a conscious thing as a little kid, but I think you're able to, you like split your personality because you have to like be safe in a way. And then in a way you're like, I think there's a lot, Dan and I are both actors. I think there's a lot that can be said about being drawn towards acting because of that like performative aspect of it. And I think there's the very long conversation we could have, like the parallels between being attracted to scary things, being a queer person because of the camp, because of like the catharsis of getting to get your screams out and express yourself in a way that you normally are trained not to. I don't think that answered your question, Elliot. I think I went in a different direction.
Yeah, that's very eloquent though. I like that.
Yeah, you had a knowledge of, you were in on the joke, whereas I was not.
Well, there's also like a whole thing in horror, the horror genre. I mean, Daniel, I think you probably could speak to this, where there's like queer tropes within horror genre, both in writing, both in film. I mean, you see it. There's a great documentary coming out by Sam Wyman for Shudder called like The Queer Horror, 100 Best Queer Horror Moments or something. I was just DMing with him about it. It's really great. He's a great, great filmmaker. But there's something there that like queer people, I think, respond to in horror, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit like horror in some ways is like the other, you know, like it's sort of separate, or sometimes it's positioned as separate from cinema or film or whatever. Kind of in the past has had sort of a bad reputation for always being terrible, which is which is absolutely not true.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, growing up queer, it's like you innately feel like you are the other in some ways.
What's your favorite horror film?
I, That's a really tough question. Yeah. My favorites are Halloween, Friday the 13th, Halloween H2O, I Know What You Did Last Summer, Scream, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. What about you, Matthew?
Mine are close. Mine are I Know What You Did Last Summer, Halloween, literally Halloween H2O, the original Halloween, Scream, and Scream 4. So Daniel goes a little bit further back than I do. I like 90s slashers. It's hard for me to think of
Scream as a horror film in a weird way.
Why? Because it's a dark comedy?
It feels like such a comedy that like it doesn't feel like a horror genre film. It feels like a comedy film in a way that is like has a horror element to it. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I was going to say real quick. One of the things that I sometimes miss about my childhood, I think I've mentioned this briefly in the past. I miss believing in ghosts, and I miss there was like something about like the excitement of being afraid of things. I've become logical enough that I only fear someone breaking into my apartment and beating me to death or whatever. Yeah. And which is one reason why like movies like It, which are fun to see, they just scare me because I'm like, I don't believe it, this is real.
The TV film version of It was literally one of the most homoerotic like horror films. I think I remember as a kid watching that, the shower scene where monsters, and I literally was like both terrified and turned on. The same with Freddy, the first Freddy in the shower. Mm-hmm. Well, not the first Freddy, one of the Freddies with the shower second scene. Was it the second one? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That one also, as a kid, I remember being like, this is really hot, but also terrifying. Like, I didn't know how to mix the two in my head. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Come to find out, Alan can't come unless you like startle him.
Yeah. Yeah. Brent, there are many people who can't come without being choked. That is not an uncommon thing.
I support that. I support people.
There's this one moment in the one, Michael, what's the horror film we watch all the time? Paranormal Activity. Paranormal Activity might actually be one of my favorite horror films, just because I can easily stand there and be like, Paranormal Activity, and just do this.
Yeah.
Just like the shaking thing.
Bobbing. Yeah,
and it's the funniest joke to me. It's just so funny to me.
Where do you guys fall in terms of like torture porn? Like Saw or
don't like it. Not for us.
That really scared me because I thought you were asking a different question and not.
I was like, oh boy, I don't know, like these movies
that are like so horrifying. I can't even like think about it without getting nauseous. Saw. But what turns Saw. You off from them?
I don't dislike those films. It just doesn't do anything for me. Like it doesn't scare me. It doesn't, I don't know. I don't get anything out of it. And I'm not a huge like gore fan necessarily. Yeah. I don't mind it, I guess, but I don't know. It just does nothing for me.
What's the fine line between horror and like horror, gore, and torture?
Well, that's a good question. I haven't actually sat down and watched a Saw movie all the way through. I've seen like long clips. Are they scary movies? Or is it just suspenseful with torture and gore?
I think suspenseful.
I mean, there's a scary element. There's one of them that literally makes a fantastic argument for universal healthcare in the United States. Literally. I remember I saw it in theaters and I was like, this is what Obama needs to explain everything.
They passed Obamacare because of that.
Literally.
You saw Seven.
Yes.
Go ahead, Alan. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, the Saw movies, they are horror films, but they do lean more in the sort of shock, suspense.
Yeah, I was not thinking of Saw. I was thinking of The Human Centipede.
Okay. Yeah, that one's certainly a deep cut when different. It comes to like torture-ish. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I don't think it's a deep cut. I mean, isn't that hugely popular or no? Am I wrong?
I mean, it's a reference that everybody knows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
And you're just not interested in it?
I mean, I'll watch anything. So like but I don't get joy out of it. Like I don't watch it and say like, I love this. This is good. I'm glad I'm watching this.
Wait, all right. So we talked about Halloween and all that stuff for a while, but I want to ask you like a little bit about like, what's it like being gay twins? What was your coming out process? Like, I mean, tell me a little bit about like that.
But make it scary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Startle Alan. He wants to come.
This is great because it's terrifying. It does get really violent. There's a little torture porn in there, but
checks all the boxes.
Yeah.
We had different coming out experiences at very different times.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did. We grew up in a private Christian school environment in North Carolina. Oh. And terrifying. And I went to, I'll make this real short, but went to a theater conference senior year, met a cute boy, guess I'm officially gay. We started secretly dating, and then my parents found out.
Oh. How did they find out?
They overheard you on the phone.
In my closet.
Oh, in your closet.
Oh, the metaphor.
I thought Rosemary was at choir practice, but she wasn't. And I was talking on the phone with the boyfriend's best friend. And we were talking, saying all kinds of stuff. My mom came upstairs to deliver some laundry and just overheard me talking on the phone in my closet. And
in your closet.
Wow.
It gets I was sort of forced out in a way.
Yeah. And then
we had to address that.
Yeah, go ahead.
It was not a good time. These are not good
really
memories
hard.
At all. Yeah,
oh,
it was awful.
Yeah.
It was really bad.
Matthew, it was really hard.
So wait, where were you in this then? Had you come out already? Were you there?
I mean, I don't want to get too specific, but after she overheard Daniel on the phone, she came to me and wanted me to, why didn't I tell her that I knew that Daniel was gay? So it just turned into our mother blaming.
It was really rough.
It was really terrible. So, you know, that day my mom made me promise that I would never be gay right after that. And so, I held on for as long as I could. But when I moved to LA, I did a show immediately when I moved here, pretty much. I did a play that ran for a year where I was playing a 15-year-old kid who was coming out of the closet. And it was like a domestic drama about being a physically and emotionally abused for being gay. And so the day that I booked that play, my parents were in town and I had that conversation with them at the Grove while it was raining. Daniel, I don't know where you were, but it was just me and my parents, and we had me, John Voight at the table next to us, and Piers Morgan at the table on the other side.
Where were you at? Cheesecake?
Morel's. We were at Morel's, which is now closed. And my mom she straight up asked me. She asked me, am I questioning my orientation? That was the only word she could use for a very long time. So then she cried and left. And then it just left me and my dad and Piers and John Voight there. And then
did she get parking validation before she left? That's important.
She went up to the top of the parking deck and stood there in the rain. And I had to go up there and apologize for being gay.
Oh, my God. Have they come around? Have they warmed up a little? Or
Yeah. They say the word gay now. Yeah.
All right.
It's a big step, right?
Baby steps, yeah.
Wait, so when did you two find out from each other? Like, was it when Daniel was found out? Like, when did both of you sort of have that moment where you told each other?
We never really had, we never had that specific conversation.
I don't remember that.
We never did. I don't think it was necessary at all for either one of us to
Wow.
I really think so.
We never
talked about it.
I think we were just trying to survive every single day that we could.
High school was really challenging.
Yeah, it wasn't a good time.
Mm-mm. It really was really hard. So we were just like trying to make it and like be as supportive of each other as we could at the time.
Yeah. Totally.
And now you're. Go ahead, Elliot.
Did you come out to LA together at the same exact time?
Mm-mm. No.
Dion came out first.
Four years apart.
I followed him out here later. Yeah.
True.
Oh, wow.
I can imagine. No, okay. This is just like me knowing LA really well and how disgusting people can be. when you two are out, like let's say at a bar or something, or you're doing something together, especially a gay space, a queer space, what sort of questions do you get? And do they run the really gross sort of porny aspect?
They must.
Like,
they must
go in the direction of so have you guys ever?
No.
Almost never.
Oh, really?
I can't think of a time when anyone has said that.
I guess that's Alan's the perv.
No, because that's such a huge thing in porn, at least. Yeah. And especially queer sort of stereotypes of sort of the twinning, you know what I mean?
There's like literal twins, porn twins or something.
Yeah. I've only gotten that probably two or three times.
I'm proud of our community.
Usually when somebody asks that, I don't like those questions at all.
Yeah.
And I immediately file away in my brain. Okay, cool. I'm not going to talk to this person.
I don't think if Daniel and I were out and about together, I don't think we give off energy that welcomes those comments. Do you,
right.
Daniel?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I don't remember. I haven't, but we also haven't been outside in a long
time. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
Do you guys find that you go to bars together? Did you kind of
sometimes.
Going out together, or also living independent lives as well, obviously?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes. Yeah. I'm trying to think have you and I, just the two of us, ever gone out?
I don't know if we have.
I don't think we have.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't think we have.
Well, You're both actors. So you do very separate projects, but you also do a lot of projects. You have the production company together that you put on sort of like.
I have nothing to do with that. That's all Daniel.
Yeah,
that's all me.
It's all you. Daniel. Oh, yes. I don't know why I thought you were part of it. Well, so,
oh, no, so no, no. Daniel is way more talented and experienced with all that stuff. I'm literally just an actor, and he's a writer, director, producer. He's incredible. Yeah.
You're not just an actor. You're a gay twin.
Yeah, that's right.
That's true.
Wait, so you do the Creepshow, right?
Daniel does.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's That's my little baby.
Every year, it's not the past year probably, but
we actually did
before.
They did do a show, and it was. It was one of my favorite things that Daniel's ever done.
Sure.
Explain Creepshow.
So I have a company that we do immersive theater,
mm-hmm.
interactive, in the most fun way possible. Mm-hmm. Immersive experiences or theater, and we do shows all year round on a normal year. Mm-hmm. And our sort of flagship show is called Creep or Creep LA, and it's every fall here in LA. And every year is a different sort of theme, a different location, and it is usually a 90-minute experience that's sort of scary, sexy, campy, all of the above.
Now, let's say you.
Okay, that sounds so fun.
This past year was really difficult to do an immersive show because you are touched in our shows. Mm-hmm. Like you have to sign a waiver and it's very intimate, and that's just part of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I just will scream if we don't do a show. I just don't know what we had to do a show. We just
had in a bad way, not in a good way, right? Like
yeah,
like,
right, right.
You screaming right. is like you never know
exactly.
Right,
yeah,
right.
I guess that's true. Yeah,
right.
But we had this location and we were able to do a short 12-minute experience, sort of pared down, that we called Inside, where actors we were inside the house and you sort of crept around like this big mansion and just watched scenes in windows
if you were Michael Myers, like looking into a house on Halloween night, the things that you would see, it was like very like voyeuristic.
Oh, that's a great
inside.
Idea.
And as you walked around the house, the story developed and it was just genius. It was incredible.
Wow. Yeah, it's really
my voice. We were literally following guests around with a speaker that was me reading a poem I'd written.
Yeah,
in the house.
Yeah, you know, it was a bummer. I feel like I love Halloween, and last year
you love Halloween.
I do love Halloween. Yeah, and last year because of the pandemic and the election, it just like it was no. I could not get into the spirit that year.
So get really in the spirit. Excited. You've never dressed up. You don't.
I don't dress up, but I love watching like I always listen to a recording of Sleepy Hollow.
Work.
I absolutely the Glenn Close recording of Sleepy Hollow that my
there's a Glenn Close recording of Sleepy Hollow fail
like,
on my
it's
part.
It's like an audiobook and it's like a really good retelling of the story.
I love it.
And it like reminds me of my childhood and I love the candy. I mean, I really enjoy ghost
that
stories.
Blows me away. I didn't know this about
me
you.
Either.
Yeah. I very much enjoy the spirit. Wow. Also, it's fall. Fall's nice. But I'm excited for this year because I think I'm really going to be able to get into the spirit. I think everyone is.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go all out this year for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, Matthew, you also, one thing I do want to ask you about, because you have was it Disney or Nickelodeon? I forget what channel it was
Disney,
on.
Right?
Show.
Disney.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you are not, I guess, a former. You're still known for it, I guess. But what was it? Austin Alley? What was the name of the show?
I was on a few
now?
Of them, but the one that I'm most known for was called Sunny with a Chance. And then in the third season, the title changed to So Random. So that's the one that I mostly get recognized from.
So like when you get recognized, because I mean, the people who probably watched it when it was on have grown a little bit. Like what kind of reactions do you get? from
Every single boy that I want to date has watched it growing up, and it's an issue.
Wow.
Yes, because I but yeah, it happens, I don't know, pretty frequently.
It's very funny to see you come up in GIFs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Look, yeah, you'll come up in GIFs on GIFs.
TikTok, there was like a resurgence because the kids that watched it growing up right now are like 18, 17, 16, 17, 18. Mm-hmm. The boys I like to date are older than that. They're usually like 22 to 25.
Right.
But like it kind of had, and we did a reunion of it last year during the pandemic, and now it's on Disney. Like a lot of the stuff is on Disney Plus. So there's been like kind of a resurgence of it in the past year. But I haven't been, I've only been out twice. I did get recognized both times I went out, but I haven't been out and about very much, so I don't know if that will change.
Well, it happens pretty often.
Does it?
And what, people think Matthew is me, or I'm Matthew. That happens often too.
Mm-hmm. But like dating apps, I always wonder about, you know, not kid stars, but like people who are on kid-centered entertainment.
It's a huge problem.
What is it like being on dating apps for stuff?
It's really hard. It's really, really hard. Grindr, I steer clear of, but it's really, really tough. I've had several disaster dates where I find out once we are on the date that that's what they're really interested in, or they have tattoos and stuff like that. That's happened before. So it's tough. I don't give out my phone number until I meet someone in real life, of course. Usually it transfers from Tinder to Instagram, and then I get to see their Insta, and it helps if they're already in the industry or if they have mutual friends. Daniel and I have a lot of friends that are way, way, way more successful than us that we are with on a daily basis. Uh-huh. And so sometimes those people find Daniel or I to get to those people. So it's a minefield, or whatever the expression is for dating. It's really, really hard. And I don't know if any of you are on Raya. Raya, there's like six gay guys and they all live in Milan. There's like
this app makes no sense. It's all
Raya
like
makes.
It's everybody is like a hairstylist.
Explain
or
Raya,
artist.
A lot of people don't
know. It's a dating app that's like
for celebrities.
You have to be invited to be on it, and if you pay for it, it's like premium. And
it's like Dan Levy, and then like guys in Uzbekistan, like
but like the location settings on there, they'll just show you everyone in the world as opposed to who lives in West Hollywood.
I
was not a fan.
That is surreal.
And I wanted to also mention that Daniel has a great sketch Instagram. Explain it for me. What's the name of it?
It's called Guy Drawing Guys.
Mm-hmm. And it's just a bunch of naked guys. I will be. Yes.
You will. Do you want me to post that one today?
Sure.
I will.
Yeah. It's great for the gay listeners. That last week Brent was like, H. Allen doesn't get naked anymore, so this is a past naked one.
Yeah, he had his whole emo phase, and he was like,
he thinks it's a phase, but we know that it's not.
No, but you had your emo phase. We know you're more comfortable being nude than I am, but I feel like you had your emo phase.
I just think it was emo. I don't think it's emo, but yes, I do like that you're in a 2004 Garden State moment, and I support that.
How dare.
Before we go, I'm just wondering, I've never asked you guys this, but do you have twin brain? Is that a thing that exists? And do you ever find that? No, you don't find that.
No, I get that. We get that question a lot. Sure. And for me, it's like, well, you know, we have we have similar thoughts, and we can finish each other's sentences and all that because, you know, we were born on the same day and have spent our entire lives together. So it's
that's real.
Yeah.
So it's like
It's not like, ouch, Matthew must have just gotten hurt.
No, right. That's never happened. No, it's like you have a built-in best friend that you know really well. We don't get it very much anymore, but like as little kids, we'd get a lot, like, which one's the evil one? They'll ask us that a lot.
Oh, and then which one are you, David or Michael?
Yeah, we get that a lot too.
Which one is the evil one, though? I want to know that.
Well, here's
the answer, Matthew.
So, what you see is what you get with me. I'm no more evil than what you see. I put it all out there. If you met us, you would think I'm the evil one immediately, but it's Daniel, because Daniel is way smarter.
I know that.
And like you would never know if he kills someone. He keeps it all hidden deep, dark, and underneath there's darkness that I could never achieve.
That's sort of how I think of myself, and I think of that as a really great trait.
Well, thanks, guys. This was such a blast.
Thanks, guys. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Instagram, Daniel X Montgomery, or on Twitter is just Daniel Montgomery.
There you go.
Yeah, my Insta is Matthew_Scott_Montgomery. My Twitter is iRobotYouJane, which is a Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode. Oh, wow. And my TikTok is just Matthew Scott Montgomery. And our Goosebumps podcast is Welcome to Deadcast, the Goosebumps podcast. Perfect. And it's on Spotify. Any place you listen to your podcast, it's there.
Definitely listen to the podcast, guys. It is so fun. I've listened for it's years.
You
now,
don't have to know the books or the TV series to you listen to it either. A lot of our listeners don't. They just like
it's not about
out
the
with
books.
Us
it's about you. Yeah, it's about you guys and your shared love of Goosebumps. It's great.
Yeah,
so you need
it. Brilliant. Thank you.
All right. Well,
thanks guys. What a blast.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And another thing.
So I have noticed. I think there's been a real big confluence of this happening along dating apps and in social media, but there has been a real, it feels like there's this moment of reckoning against the quote unquote Disney gays.
Against them,
Disney gays. And I have seen so much, maybe I'm just noticing it, but I've seen more than, and now actually Brent sent me today a screenshot from Hinge of somebody who said that Disney gays should be excluded from getting the vaccine.
Yeah. By the way, fun note about that screenshot. I screenshotted it, sent to Elliot, and he goes, I've already dated that guy.
Will you send it to me? I want to see that.
Yeah, I will.
But
anyway,
I think it's fun to talk about because it has become
a thing.
We've
talked about it a lot, too.
We've talked about it before.
Disney gays is a big thing.
Yeah. It's a big thing, and Alan and Michael both identify as Disney gays.
You guys are, right?
Well, okay, I tweeted something today or yesterday or whenever it was where I was like, I don't identify as a Disney gay, but I am a Disney gay. Do you know
exactly
what I mean?
Yeah, you don't identify as a Disney gay sorry, I need to cut you off.
Well, just because I feel like there is something, there is a trope happening, or whatever you want to call it, of the Disney gay, meaning that it is usually two white people who go to Disney in tank tops, who wear specifically the Rainbow Pride Disney collection, off-brand shoot that isn't necessarily Disney, and they'll wear the tank tops there, and they'll wear the ears, and they'll have the balloons, and they'll post face-tuned pictures of themselves at the castle, or like eating stuff or whatever, and it's very it's performative, you know what I mean? The experience is performative. Now I don't think that these people aren't as much of a fan of Disney as I am. I think they're probably equally as much of a fan of Disney as I am. The difference, though, is that this Disney gay, quote unquote, loves to promote that they are a Disney gay. They post these photos everywhere. It's in their bios of their Instagram, their Hinge
dating profiles,
whatever it is. Like, it's out there. Whereas for me, my love of Disney is very apparent. You come to even my coffee area here, and there's like Disney mugs here. Like, we're a Disney family. We love Disney. Mm-hmm. But it isn't necessarily an identifier that you would see looking at my social media. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. No, you would never know it according to your social media. And also, I feel like you and Michael are Disney fans with a glimmer in your eye, if you will, where, yes, you enjoy it, you love it, you go. And I also enjoy it, too. But there's also a part of you that are like, high fashion and understand.
Yeah. We're in on the joke sometimes.
You're in on the joke, yes. Mm-hmm. And I'm very freaked out by this lack of being in on the joke where I've at least seen in a couple profiles, one guy wrote like, my one deal breaker is that you're not like, you won't go to Disney with me and like let out your inner child. And I'm like,
what?
Okay.
Yeah. Chill out.
I enjoy Disneyland, but I also am freaked out by the idea of anybody draping themselves in one specific brand head to toe. Like, you know what I mean? There's also some sense of arrested development about it that I think also gives me the creeps.
Yeah.
In what way?
Well, it's just like, there's a lack of like growing up that feels.
But there is, I mean, I'll let you go first.
I enjoy Disneyland too. And Disney World, I really do. But yeah. I think there's something about it that just seems like that mixes like being juvenile with romance in a way that for straight people too weirds me out. Like Disney weddings.
I just smelled my lotion, by the way. I have lotion on my table.
Yeah, I was wondering what you just did.
Yeah. I was in the mood. You know, here's what I'll say. Disneyland is fine. I'm from the Midwest, and almost anyone who's from four or five states in the Midwest knows Cedar Point, which is the greatest amusement park in all of the land. It has like 20 of the best roller coasters in America. And if
are there Cedar Point
like,
gays?
Well, there's gay days at Cedar Point, but I wouldn't say that. I've never seen on Hinge when I go back to Michigan, there's Cedar Point gays. But I was going to say, like, I get, like, I have a soft spot in my heart for Cedar Point because it's, you know, I went as a kid with my family. I have all these amazing memories of it. It was always just so fun to go and, like, and so I can understand if someone, like, if they feel that way or they, you know, if somehow something has been grandfathered into their life and it really means a lot to, like, their history or their upbringing or whatever, I can understand kind of going a little heavier handed on the Disney stuff than, you
and
know.
Just to like add on to that, there is something to the amount of children in to this day who mm-hmm. don't feel comfortable in their home settings, right? They don't feel mm-hmm. comfortable being queer in their home settings, whatever it may be, but yet they still go on a family vacation or they get lost in a Disney movie or they mm-hmm. get something. And then when they get to be an adult, they see this company that arguably is one of the most progressive, inclusive companies for queer people to be able to identify themselves in the park as queer. I mean, one of the biggest things that I thought was so kind of amazing to see is there was a trans woman who, you know, she was clearly early on her journey in being trans, and she was openly working at the bakery. She was a front-facing position. She wasn't behind the scenes. She wasn't behind the scenes cast member. She was out there in front dealing with tourists, people from all over the world coming to Disneyland. And to me, that spoke to the kind of place that I want to give my money to and participate in and be a part of, because it's like I want that woman to thrive in her life and to be able to, you know, go places and do things. And also, like, there's
I want her to make $8.25 an hour at Disneyland. Yes, Alan, I agree.
No. Yeah, you know what I mean. Like,
no, I'm fucking around. Yes, I agree with you completely. Yes.
And just to be able to have that and to feel like you're at a place that maybe as a child your family didn't necessarily feel like a safe place, but this place is welcoming you in a weird way. And you're able to be kind of a kid for a little bit. Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, and on that hand too, like I do appreciate that Disney, above other theme parks that I can think of at least, does have all this pride, you know, all the pride stuff and the merchandise and embrace it that way. I think that's great. I'm just always wary of like one thing being like your
for
one
sure
thing.
But that said, I mean, and to like last night for example, like just even when I'm like, okay, well, we don't have a season pass anymore because that no longer is in existence, so we have to like, we can't go as often as we used to and all those things, so like maybe I'm not as much of a Disney gay or whatever. And then last night we come home and we went to go see Quiet Place 2, right? It was our first movie out like in a year and a half. And we then got home, had dinner, and then Michael was like, I'll put on this new short film that like people are talking about. And it was called The Little Prince with the SS in like parentheses. And it is, I could not stop crying about how beautiful this little 19-minute film was about a little Chinese boy in first grade, American Chinese boy, who loves ballet and he loves pink and he loves everything. And he's in this integrated school of just sort of a bunch of other nationalities and types of kids. And the second grader, another Chinese boy, they connect, but the father doesn't want his kid being friends with the ballet boy kid.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this really emotional standoff that happens when the little ballet boy loses his ballet doll that he loves so much. And so the little straight boy makes him this little doll with like a tutu on it. And the father sees it. And that's when he goes over to confront the parents. And that confrontation is something that every queer kid wants that conversation, their dad to have that conversation with another dad. And it's just, and the fact that like that kind of thing is being pushed out in streaming services saying, you need to watch this.
Was it on Disney Plus or something?
It's on Disney Plus. Yeah. And it's just a short film, but it's like, I'm happy to support a company that gives me things like that. You know,
so
what I mean?
Also that if Disney had a New York City Pride Parade float,
I would be on it.
Support that.
I would be on it. Yes,
I didn't
I
say
would.
You were invited.
Yes,
I said,
oh,
would
I
you
am
support
invited,
it?
Bitch. I am invited.
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's podcast?
I'm volunteering myself to be a safety volunteer.
my aunt Joanne would say, if you brought coffee cake onto a float and I was there, I'd eat it. I don't say no. How about Aunt Anne?
My Aunt Anne would probably angrily say, now, no, the homosexuals love police. Look at the village people. They love police officers. This is all backwards.
That's so funny. Well, thanks for listening. I love Aunt Anne.
Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I am Aunt Anne.
And I'm H. Allen Scott. Go watch Princess.
Oh, I was going to say shut up, but I guess I can't anymore.
Can't now, because I have to have people go watch this short film.
Elliot thinks everything is you know, Little House on the Prairie. He says his sex life is Little House on the Prairie, and then we have to end the podcast without cursing, without saying anything bad. We have to say, hey, I love you, Alan. I love you. I love all people.
His sex life, great.
Laura Ingalls Wilders of Unhinged.
Laura Ingalls Wilders. He does. It's so crazy. Elliot will literally be like,
oh God, just cut this, please. This has been cut.
He pretends like his sex life is out of like Farmer Boy. Right. He's like, I kissed a boy and I didn't like it. And I don't think I'll ever do it again. Meanwhile, he was getting DP'd at 18. I'm not kidding. He was getting DP'd.